never seen that. Faculty in attendance, the UOG Cabell Fieldhouse was filled. There was a lot of excitement, a wonderful message by our valedictorian. We had two STEM-related valedictorians. We also had a great message by a commencement speaker, His Excellency President Whips Jr. from Palau, among other great items. This season of spring, as well as into this summer, has been filled with much flux with regard to what has been happening at the federal landscape, and its culminating impact on universities and colleges, particularly the University of Guam. And so we've seen such uncertainty unfold, a lot of anxiety, fears, and some folks refer to it as I'm getting whiplash because the decision is made on the one hand, and maybe a day or two or a week afterwards, the decision has been stayed, or some other action has caused a pause in some drastic decision, whether it be elimination of funding for an existing program, or perhaps a pause on a notice of award, and also the impact on indirect costs revenue to the University of Guam, and especially for those that depend on the approved indirect rate on their particular grants. And of course, soon we're hoping something changes, but the impact, potential impact of a reduction from our current indirect cost rate down to 15%. And so I want to thank our executive director, Mike O'Connor, for his diligence with his team and monitoring, together with the Vice Provost for the Office of Research and Sponsored Programs, Dr. Pam Peralta, among other administrators, monitoring on a daily basis all of these changes and anticipated changes that have been unfolding under this current administration out of Washington, D.C. And so as we start to plan for the various contingencies and the what ifs, it behooves us to track as closely as possible, and to have the regular conversations that we have been having with Congressman Moylan's key representatives. So Michael Sciacca has been the point of contact for most of us, those of us who have been in Washington, D.C., meeting with a number of our either program managers or advocates. I had the liberty of meeting with our consultant from the implementation group to get an update, and to also advise that we would love to be able to track other kinds of grant opportunities outside of the NSF and perhaps the NIH spaces. So we have good news, we have bad news. We'll hear more from Michael, and of course any other information that will come through, we would like to share. The University of Guam has received its general audit from Ernst & Young. That information has been made public through the two local media sources. A second audit of the credit card and purchase cards has already been shared in draft form to the University of Guam. I have provided management's response last week, Friday. The audit is being presented to the oversight chair of the Committee on Education. He and the members of the committee have met or are meeting to review the audit findings. And by next week, I should be hearing from them. As we know, the RCOG has also been undergoing an audit, and so we will receive the findings shortly. The findings with regard to the credit card and purchase card use, at least overall for the University of Guam, have been what's the light word? In abundance. And so I have suspended all use of purchase cards or P cards and have suspended all but one use by one user the use of the credit card until a credit card policy is in place. So I have also instructed the our internal risk auditor to start reviewing the credit card and purchase card uses for 2024 and 2025. So a lot of activity with regard to that, a lot of tightening of controls. Obviously, what affects the University of Guam as a whole may have some implications to the RCOG because policies that may somewhat mirror the University of Guam's policies. And so in the meantime, there have been new grant awards, and we are, of course, concerned of any implications with regard to the growth of our grants portfolio and the culminating impact should the indirect rate drop to 15% overall. So that's what I have for now, and I'll just go ahead and close my remarks and move us into new business if there aren't any questions. I don't see any hands raised from my end. I'll go ahead and take us into item number 4.1, Acting Executive Director's Report to the Board. Michael?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can everyone see my PowerPoint currently? Okay, great. So that was a really good speech because a lot of it actually that Madam Chair mentioned is things that I will also talk about in my director's report. So some of the usual, the good news is that our grant expenditures, even with all the things that are going on in the federal government, is still going up. It's got up 11.26% from fiscal year 24, otherly known as a 1.6 million. So that's still a lot. That's still very, very good on our side that our expenditures are continuously going up, even with all the disarray that's currently going on with the federal government. Our indirect costs have also gone up. Madam Chair mentioned about the indirect costs rate change. We'll be talking a little bit more about later. But as of this moment, it's still gone up again, 8.81% from fiscal year 24. Our operations revenue is roughly close to what it was in fiscal year 24. It went down a little bit. I would say a giant reason for that is the ESF grant, which we had with Department of Education, which was over $5 million. There was a lot of administrative fees that we were able to get from those in the last 2 years, which we don't have in fiscal year 25, which is why the revenue is a little bit less than it was in the previous year. Our expenditures went up about 13% for fiscal year 24. That's something that we know that was already going to happen anyways. So that was not out of the norm from what we expected. Some of our KPIs, we have 231 employees as of this moment. 141 of them are full-time, 90 of them are part-time, and 23 of those are students. We also support about 182 grants as of this moment with annual budgets of about $37 million and $112 million in multi-year budgets. So we have a little bit more than we did when we ended last year. Moving on. Travel awards. We have already given more than 1 million miles in travel awards just in fiscal year 25. We have about 1,075,000. We've sent about 13 students. This is soon to update to 14 because we are in the midst of booking another person. Thank you to Dr. Rachel for also donating our RCUG miles to this student. So it's soon to be 14. So this is something that we track and it's something that we want to be able to get back to our students. Dr. Enriquez, Madam Chair, mentioned about the credit card audit. That's where our miles go to the students so that they can go on these trips that otherwise they wouldn't probably be able to go to. So we've already given 1 million. I guess probably by the end of the year, we can expect that number to only go up. Last week, I did attend the Government Procurement Summit and did speak in the first panel. Thankfully, I would say that was the easier panel because that's the panel of what's going right in the government procurement side. So thank you to Madam Chair for allowing me to be able to go to this and speak to the effect of what our COG is doing in terms of our procurement. I thought it went well. I did get a lot of people that talked to me afterwards about asking, you know, how our COG does some of this that we do. So we are excited for, you know, potential partnerships with other agencies or other organizations as well. I wish I had a better picture, but unfortunately, I guess the rumors are right where you say if you add 10 or 15 pounds on camera, I don't like that picture on the right side, but I didn't have any better picture. Some updates. So as Madam Chair mentioned, our OPA credit card audit is still ongoing as of this moment. So the University of Guam got their draft form as Dr. Rique has mentioned. We have not gotten ours yet. When we did release everything to them, we were considered separate on our credit card audit as opposed to the University of Guam's. Overall, I think we did pretty well in regards to what we were able to provide, but we realized that there's a pretty strong likelihood based off of all the OBA audits that we've had in the past that they're probably going to have something to say about that. So we're very prepared to see and respond accordingly. Of course, we'll work with the board and we'll work with the chair and everybody else to ensure that you guys are aware of everything when that audit does come out. As Madam Chair mentioned, the fiscal year 24 audit with Ernst & Young has been completed. There were some findings and question calls, but it wasn't RCOGs. It was the University of Guam as a whole. So I'd like to thank my team in particular, who was able to, again, have a clean audit for RCOG. We didn't have a question cost or any question findings in our time. We had our usual bout in which providing several documents to them from January all the way up until around April or May. Our team was able to provide them on a very consistent and timely basis, and I didn't hear any feedback from our auditors in regards to any of our documents being an issue. And I'm the one that normally submitted everything, so kudos to us and kudos to the team for making sure our documents are complete. Thank you, team. Some technology and software improvements that we've done. Fund Manager, which is the one with ORSP in which they use their Caillou system to be the connected colleague, is still currently ongoing at this moment. Ambush Chrome River, which is our travel software, is active, but we're delaying it until August when OIT switches servers. There are a little bit of issues that we found, but we want to ensure that it works correctly when they do their server change. There is something that I have launched already where I will announce to everybody after this meeting, but I wanted the board to be the first to see it. I did create an RCOG chatbot. So if I go into our website, there actually is one already. If I can get into it's on the bottom right screen of our website. And if we click on that, there actually is a chatbot now that exists as of this moment. So just to kind of give one, for example, if I were to ask it, what is RCOG, it would give a whole definition of what it is that we are in the form of how I kind of educated that chatbot. And then you can ask follow-up questions. For example, it will ask if you want listings to policies and forms, and it does also provide that as well. It's a really neat chatbot that a lot of universities and other websites are starting to have, and we wanted to make sure that we also evolve on our side. Because I feel like, thank you, Chair, or thank you, Joanna. I feel like most universities are doing this at this moment. So we also wanted to show that it's possible on our side. In general, I would say probably 50 or 60% of the calls that we get are probably things that could have been answered by this chatbot. So we're hopeful that it probably reduces some of the phone calls that we have here so our staff can, you know, work on things, other things, and be able to expand their skill sets to other types of work as well. So that's it. I will be launching that and I'll be announcing it probably after this meeting so that everyone knows that it's on the website. It's actually been up since last week. We've been testing it quite a bit. And of course, you know, it's probably not going to be perfect, but if there are any issues and you guys ever decide to be able to use it, we would love to know the issues so that we can hopefully fix it. We also launched an Aflac benefit, which is 100% paid by the employees. So there's literally no employer share on this. It's not payroll deducted because we have too many temporary employees. It would be a payroll nightmare. So it's actually straight from an employee's bank or their credit card with the employee prices, the company prices. So just the benefit that we wanted to give to some of the staff that may want to avail of this. It's very portable, so even if their time here in RCOG is short, they can still port it out. We have applied for some grants ourselves as well. You know, we realize that because with the grants environment, we can't just wait for grants to come to us also. So there was one where I paired with Bompedia. Unfortunately, it got denied due to not aligning with the administration's new priorities that they have. We have applied for one at Astro America, along with Dean Hiroshan from the School of Engineering, which is very, very, very close to being announced. The contract has already been drafted. It's also been approved from General Counsel Anthony Camacho as well. So hopefully we can get that final draft and award soon. What that will be for is for equipment for the School of Engineering, as well as for some faculty as well. So that'll be very helpful. I also applied for two other grants with the National Park Service as well as USGS, and I'm just still waiting for it to be able to hear back from it. This is probably the bad news, because I know everybody knows that there is a lot of changes that's happening in the federal government. I would say that there's actually some good news too. These numbers that were here were probably a lot worse the last time I had this meeting back in March. There has been a lot of changes since then, some things good and some things bad. In regards to affected grants, we have five grants in particular that were terminated. Most of them using the language of it no longer effectuates the president's or the agency's direction. So we had two EPA grants, we had one NOAA grant, we had a USAID grant, and we had a USDA $5 million grant that was terminated. Now, the good news is that that $5 million grant is possible to be able to resurrect. What they have on their side is they want us to reissue a new budget, and hopefully it can get approved. That USDA grant is a grant that's nationwide. It's the Climate Smart Grant. So a lot of states actually have that, and they're actually doing the same thing as us, in which they're trying to amend the budget so that they can resubmit it, and hopefully they can get that grant back to us. I have heard today as well that the EPA grants, particularly those that deal with environmental justice, was recently struck down as not allowable by a court just today. So there might be a possibility that $3 million grant, as well as that 200K grant that's over there, might be resurrected as well. But we never know. The federal government is really out of whack right now. There's a lot of things that are happening, so we honestly don't know. But we're hopeful, at least. There are eight grants in particular that we're monitoring. We're looking at the NIH PIPT, one of our bigger cancer grants. Dr. Rachel over here is the PI for that grant. I'm monitoring it just because I think there's a strong likelihood that we might not have funding after August 31st for that. So we are monitoring it and ensuring that we can transition some of the employees. We're working with Dr. Rachel and her team on that. We do have the Department of Energy grant as well, which is $1.695 million. That one we've been monitoring throughout the year as well. It goes up and down, but right now it is currently up, so we are proceeding as is. And then we've had other grants as well that we're currently monitoring. One of them that's the biggest one would probably be the USDA NextGen grant, which is a $10 million grant. That was a grant that was suspended for about 2 months and with no explanation. At all. It's not just here at the University of Guam that had that issue. When I went to a conference down in March at DC, many different universities also had that problem and they didn't know what was going on. But back in around April, it came alive again. And now everything has been activated again. So the good news is that it's back up. So we're very happy about that. There is one grant that attracted some nationwide attention. This grant, the NSF Navigating Home, was specifically brought up by Senator Ted Cruz from Texas as a grant that they're looking at as why do we have these in our federal government. So we haven't heard anything from NSF nor our agency about it, but just because it's already made national news in some capacity, it's something that we're closely monitoring. The good news is that we haven't had to furlough people. We've furloughed temporarily, but we've been able to bring them all back and eventually get them into either new jobs or they were able to return to the jobs that they've been to when the grant returned. So So far, we've been very successful in keeping the jobs that we had. I'd really like to thank the PIs, but of course also our HR team. They work a lot of phone calls and emails to ensure that we're able to get these people to where they need to be to ensure that their jobs continue. So very, very huge kudos to them. In terms of what have we done, there have been numerous different memos that we've issued, but the ones that are currently happening right now is that we're not allowing any off-island hires. And the main reason for that is because there's just too much confusion. You know, the last thing we want is to bring someone from off-island, from the States, Taiwan, or whatever other country, and then all of a sudden they come here and their grant is terminated the next day. It's too much pressure on them to be able to make that decision. It's also hard on us as an organization. We've restricted travel to only essential travel. Most grants travel is essential anyways, so that's not as meaningful, but we're trying to make sure that people don't travel, particularly in travel that could be months and several months away. And the reason why is because we don't know when a grant might get terminated, and we don't want to be able to spend that right now when all of a sudden your travel is down until 5 months later. Another thing, and I think it's really important, is that there has been more scrutiny on grant expenditures amidst more desperate times. I mean, there's a lot of PIs, of course, that want to be able to spend down their money, because they're worried that it might not exist. So we've been extra careful because we already know when things are desperate, people want to be able to spend money and sometimes even not follow the rules at the same time. So we've been extra careful with that, probably more than ever. I think it's very important that we always have that any grant expenditure that we have be the four that's over there, which is allowable, allocable, reasonable, and consistently treated. It's extremely important, especially now more than ever, where there's a lot of audits that are going on and they're trying to ensure that we're doing the right thing. I'll give an example. I won't name who the PI is, but I had a situation where a grant was in danger of being terminated, and a PI mentioned, let's just spend it all. It's not like there's anyone on the other side to be able to see what you spend it on anyways. You know, there's no need to be careful about it. And you know, of course we didn't follow those because that's a very, very dangerous thought. But it's just the mindset of some people that we sometimes have to ensure that, you know, we let them know the rules that we follow. So in our COG, we follow Uniform Guidance 2 CFR 200, which is very stringent on what we can and what we cannot spend on. So I think more than ever, because it's pretty desperate times, that we ensure that we don't have desperate measures and decide to spend needlessly. Looking ahead, I think as Dr. Enriquez mentioned, of course, there's the problem of, you know, potential additional grant pauses, suspensions, or terminations. That happens a lot. You know, there's always rumors of things like this happening, so it's always something that we have to monitor. A reduction in new grants. I mean, the current administration has been mentioning this many times of kind of reducing the amount of money that's going out from the federal government. So we realize that this is probably going to be an issue for us. Already is, but it probably will be more so down the line. The one that Dr. Enrique has mentioned that I would say is probably my biggest worry would be the possibility of all agencies reducing indirect cost rates from 39%, which is our NICRA, to 15%. So there are four organizations already, and they're big ones, that have already issued some memos. That's NIH, Department of Energy, NSF, and DOD. The first three are all being challenged currently in the courts. So we'll see what happens to that. I haven't seen the DOD one being challenged yet, but that's not going into effect until way later down the line. Nor do we have a lot of DOD grants except for our CSU grants with Navy, but I'm not sure whether or not those would be affected by this because those have a different cooperative agreement percentage. So we'll see on this, but we are taking a lot of measures to figure out what it is that our COG can do to ensure our survivability. Because, you know, as everyone here probably knows, we are self-sustaining, so we sustain ourselves through these indirect costs as well as the administrative fees. So this is a very, very, very big deal for us, and we're trying our best to be able to figure this out. I've been working a lot with Dr. Pam from ORSP, as well as the executives from UOG. So hopefully we can provide a solution going forward, or even better, if the courts strike this down as, you know, non-constitutional or non-allowable, that would be even better news for us. but we're continuing to monitor this. There also is, I mean, I think we're all humans, so I think there is a reduction in applicants due to job insecurities and federal fluctuations. It goes without saying, just because of what everyone's hearing in the news, they're a little bit more worried about going into federal government or working on federal grants. So that was understandable, but at the same time, it does have an effect on us. And then lastly, I think we can expect our net revenue to drop in fiscal year 25 as opposed to 24 and 23. 24 and 23 were really amazing years. And while I still expect us to be able to pay our payables for the buildings, it's very, very unlikely that we'll be able to reach what we reached in 24 or even in 23 as well. In terms of possible opportunities, I mentioned this in our previous meeting, is pivoting into different grant opportunities. Much of the grants that we're probably going to have to start looking at more so is business and workforce development grants. I've been working with Dr. Jones from the School of Business actually really a lot the last few months. So we are definitely exploring that option. We have some in mind already. Applying for grants outside of the United States is something we need to consider. We actually have some grants outside of the United States currently at this moment. We have some in Europe, we had some with Australia, we had some with others as well. It's looking at that opportunity because if the federal government is drying up, we have to look at other avenues. It is very difficult because of the currency changes and the different rules that we have, but it's something that we have to be a little bit more open about and checking and seeing what opportunity is out there for us. Pivoting into more contract and cooperative agreement opportunities, you know, beyond grants, there are other opportunities. There's contracts, there's cooperative agreements. WERI has been really good at doing these in terms of contracts. So that's something that we're exploring more. We are working with WERI quite a bit within the last few years on contract opportunities in particular. Building relationships with other agencies and nonprofits and bringing in their grants to UOG. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to go to that procurement summit, is to kind of get our name out there and see, you know, who we can potentially work with. We already do work with other agencies. We've worked with Department of Agriculture, we work with the governor's office, we've worked with a few others as well. But you know, because our rules are different, because we have an opportunity with others, because we have to be a little bit more open to partnerships so that we can continue our own survivability. And lastly, I mean, as you can see with the AI chatbot that I created recently, I think there has to be more exploration and implementation of more technological solutions, particularly in workflow automation and AI. I personally really enjoy that. So I think I don't just enjoy it, but I also think it's extremely important towards our own evolution, not just in RCOG, but actually in the whole university and the whole Guam, actually. So I'm exploring a lot of options, in particular with our Microsoft 365 that we currently have. I mean, there's over 30 applications, but we only really use like four or five. But if you actually really take a look at it now, there are a lot of automation apps that are currently in Microsoft that we can explore. And we currently are. I have a team kind of assembled here already in RCUG that are kind of working on that. So hopefully we can find some opportunity. You know, none of us are IT experts by any means, but you know, these are just things that we're trying to do and figure out so that we can, you know, make our jobs a little bit easier, but also make everyone's jobs a little easier at the same time so that we can again continue our survivability and it can be a lot more efficient. And that's the end of my presentation. Does anyone have any questions?
Mike,
thank you, Mike. Go ahead.
I don't have a question. I just wanted to say thank you. What a proactive report out. You know, there's so much going on, especially in the grant world. And to hear, I mean, just everything you guys are doing to be proactive, to look at different opportunities, look at how to create capacity with this AI and automation workflows. I mean, things like this is bodes well for you guys. And yeah, thank you for this report out. It's very reassuring and comforting to hear that there are other opportunities and employees aren't getting for, you know, they aren't getting released. You're figuring out ways to keep them on board and help do the work. So thank you. Thank you to you and your team, all of you there.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you, Regent Chen. I'd like to echo that. Thank you for the comprehensive report, Michael, and of course, always being at the forefront with regard to tracking the trends and being responsive. And I have to tell everyone, Michael is proactive in keeping me and others abreast of the status as it relates to anything within the RCEOG portfolio. And I like to echo just the proactive efforts from Regent Chen with regard to workflow efficiency. So leveraging the use of technology, and as a promising practice, I'd like to see how we can leverage that across the university. And we do have a working committee for strategic pillar number 3 that has to do with employees. And I'd like to, I will invite the chair, Chris Paris out of HRO to connect with you and see how we can apply this towards upcoming training and development schedules. So thank you very much. Any comments, any questions from the group?
I do. Thank you. Okay. Thank you for that report, Michael. Much appreciated. You mentioned about seeking out external grants outside of the U.S. Great effort. I would also caution, right, as you may be aware, in our meeting, the president and I met with TIG, Dr. Kelvin Chu, and he is our consultant, as you are aware. And kind of interests, in special interest China, kind of things like that, we need to be very careful.
Of course.
Because of the standing tensions that exist. Mm-hmm. So if you see any of those kind of come your way, flag it, and please talk to us about it, and so yes. That we can be very much aware about what's going on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Charlene, for reminding us about that. I do meet regularly with federal law enforcement, and they have asked that we be diligent and, of course, share if there have been any attempts or approaches to either collaborate or to pursue something within the People's Republic of China, that's mainland China. Of course, we're always concerned about the potential for universities to be the gateway towards cyber hacks, cyber attacks, and so forth. So all the more reason, if any such information comes through from anyone who has approached RCOG, please share that immediately with me, as well as Dr. Charlene Santos Bamba, so that we're aware, and then we can, do our due diligence to ensure that the university remains protected. With regard to pivoting and exploring prioritized areas for funding under the Trump administration, we do know that there's a lot of emphasis on AI workforce development, possible funding coming through U.S. Department of Labor and other agencies that have anything to do with workforce development. So in addition to School of Business and Public Administration, think about the entire university and all other units, and to ensure that all administrators have access to the information, because you just never know that the person who is the best possible person to bring into that team to pursue an application perhaps has amazing knowledge and experiences to throw into that mix. So we want to make sure that we optimize on just the capacity that we have on this campus, because there's a lot, but you never know if they're hiding over in the communications program or perhaps somewhere in the fine arts program or in the social work program. There's all that incredible talent. And because we know that there's also a lot of emphasis on career technical education and the trades and less of a priority towards higher education, that we can see ways in which the University of Guam could pivot and try to take advantage of shifting some of what we do within our existing portfolio to meet the large funding opportunities that are out there. So I just want to I want to add that to that. We've also instructed Dr. Chu at the implementation group to just scan through and see what opportunities are flowing out of DC and, mm-hmm. and to please share that with us as a whole. Okay, thank you. Are there no other questions or comments? I'd like to go ahead and thank you very much, Michael. Excellent, excellent efforts with you and your team. Thank you again for just being, you know, being on top form. Item 4.2, we have an action item, the amended resolution number 25-04 relative to approving an incentive for RCOG employees who earn procurement grant or HR certification. So, Michael, I'm going to turn that over to you to give us background about this.
Sure, absolutely. So in our prior meeting in March, we did have this same resolution that was out. It was very supported by the board, but there was some language that wanted to be included. Number one, board member Hernandez did mention adding in two different certifications, two procurement certifications. One was the Certified Public Procurement Officer, which is the CPPO, and the Certified Public Purchasing Buyer, which is the CPPB. I don't believe there are many, if at all, people that are certified in this in Guam other than Mr. Hernandez himself. But this would obviously be something that would be very, very helpful to us to have here at RCOG. We have a lot of procurement. I mean, I was in that procurement summit and we have more purchase orders than some of those much larger agencies, at least in terms of volume. So I think having those two certifications will be very helpful for those that weren't in the other meetings. The other certifications that I was looking at was the SHRM CP, which is the from the Society for Human Resource Management. We have the Professional and Human Resources, which is a PHR, as well as the Certified Grants Management Specialist, which is the CGMS, which comes from NGMA, which is the largest grant association in the United States. So what this would be, what this resolution really is really adding these certifications into the existing ones. So as of this moment, we do have already four different accounting certifications, which is mirrors what it is in the government of Guam at this moment. I wanted to add in an additional five, which are these five certifications to be part of it as well, because I feel like all of these are very, very, very important to the development of the Research Corporation and University of Guam's employees. All of these would be very much welcomed in our team. We want to be able to build a very strong team that not only has our bachelor's degrees or our master's degree, but we're also certified in the different fields that we are in. The one that was in particular mentioned in the last meeting that we wanted to ensure was to include that RCOG employees that have job duties that directly correlate to the certification will be the ones that are eligible for this increase. So my previous resolution from the last meeting did not have that language. Madam Chair mentioned that we should probably have that language just in case. So now that's me adding in that language so that we can ensure only those that actually do that, do these things in their job are actually eligible for these certifications and their increases.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that explanation. I'll go ahead and entertain a motion for action before we have discussion on this.
So move, Madam Chair.
Second.
Thank you. Dr. Hernandez seconded by Regent Chen. Okay. Any discussion on this motion?
I just wanted to comment because I know that last meeting Michael had worked on this since then with all the comments. I just wanted to thank him for putting in the effort and also including the reputable organizations that represent these different certifications in the different fields. And I know that the procurement one is not something that is very well known in the government at this point, but I know with a lot of eyes on procurement, generally speaking, that these will help to kind of uplift some of the training and augment the training that's done, that's required by the government of Guam for all of our procurement professionals. The other person that does have it is Yuka Hechinova over at Guam Memorial Hospital Authority. And as people kind of come to see the certification specifically, because I know that the SHRM certifications and the other HR certifications are pretty well known and established. But I understand that the rigor of the UPPCC organization is there. So I just wanted to kind of add that and thank everyone for thank Michael and the team for including that and reviewing it.
Thank you as well.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Okay. I don't see any. I'll go ahead and call for the vote. All in favor of approving resolution number four. Oh wait, resolution number 25-04, please signify by saying aye, raising your hand.
Aye.
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 Okay, any opposed? Any abstention? Okay, the ayes have it. Motion is approved. Resolution 25-04 is approved. Okay, the next item on the agenda is item of 4.3, resolution number 25-05, relative to amending the RCOG employee handbook. Michael, I turn it back to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this one will, this is not, this is a new resolution. So I have a lot of explaining to do on this one. What we're amending really is our annual leave payout policy. So as currently constructed, our COG does not have a annual leave payout policy. We defer to the current University of Guam's version, which is basically to pay out annual leave upon termination or resignation. The problem with that is 2 CFR 200.431B3I of the Uniform Guidance states that payments for unused leave upon retirement or termination are unallowable as direct charges to federal ORs, and if made, must be funded through non-federal or general administrative resources in accordance with an established applied leave policy. What that means is basically you would have to use your non-appropriated funds or your indirect costs to be able to cover that. The problem that we have currently is because we have a lot of grants that have funding, we don't have a lot of discretionary funding in regards to either RCOG or the University of Guam. And at the same time, we're currently undergoing many, many grants that are getting suspended or terminated. So if a grant were to get terminated, we would not be able to charge our annual leave payouts to those employees. They would have to be technically charged to a non-appropriated fund. So one of the changes that we're making really is to not have any leave payout upon separation because of the 2 CFR 200 uniform guidance on allowing it from federal funding. So that is one part of this change that we currently have. The other change is the fact that because many grants are again either getting paused, suspended, or terminated, there's been a lot of movement in across from employees going from one grant to another. And there's been a lot of pushback sometimes from some grants in which they're not able to absorb certain employees because of the amount of leave hours that they have accrued, and they can't absorb that exorbitant amount. There are some people that have over 100 hours. Some may could have over 150, for example, hours, or sometimes even more as well. So one of the other parts to this resolution is minimizing the financial burden on grants by seeking to reduce the amount of leave that they can carry over to another funding source. As you may know, in our employee handbook currently, in our COG, we only allow employees to be able to carry up to 80 hours of leave to the next fiscal year. What this would do is be very similar to that, where if they were to switch funding sources, that they would only be able to carry over a maximum of 80 hours of both annual and sick leave as well.
Thank you very much, Michael. So we have for action, let's see, resolution 25-05. I'll go ahead and entertain a motion.
Motion.
Oh, Regent Malia, I second.
Seconded by Regent Malilai. Thank you very much. Any discussion on this motion?
I have a question, Michael. So what do we think the, I mean, just what do you think the impact's going to be for, I mean, this kind of benefit, because you guys have had this sort of benefit for your employees, your 240 employees now. So what do you expect the sort of the response to be and the impact to be?
It's, I mean, personally to me, it's not something I want to do. It's because I, you know, of course it's affecting benefits, so it would affect my own as well as my core team also. But I feel like it's necessary because A, it's not allowable for 2 CFR 200, and B, we just don't have the funding capability to be able to pay that out administratively, you know, if the time comes. The worry that I have on my side is if a mass amount of grants were to get terminated, or a very large grant were to get terminated, and there are 10, 15, 20 employees that have so much annual leave, how would we pay that out? And I think this policy helps to give an answer to that. And the answer is that you wouldn't get it paid out, basically. I don't want to do this to any employee, but I feel like it's necessary because I don't know a way out to be able to pay some of those annual leave if we do not have it. This is me trying to mitigate the risk of what could possibly happen.
Thank you for that, Michael. I think it's important also to recognize that, you know, as administrators, oftentimes we have to make these really tough decisions that may not be popular, right? We know it's not popular, but also for the sustainability of the organization, sometimes it has to be done. So thank you.
Exactly. Hi, Dr. Rachel.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, we're facing that with the cancer grant because we know that it's ending in August. So we've been telling all the employees, if you have leave, use it up now, because you're not going to get any payouts. And, you know, we started telling them that several months ago. And, you know, because we don't have the money, you know, so.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Rachel. That's a really good example because that one's ending in August 31.
Right. So Rachel Fields, hand was up.
Just to comment further that, yeah. I mean, you know, just, I know RC UOG and UOG kind of operate in, you know, kind of parallel to one another, but there are instances where, you know, units who are administering these grants will come to my office and say, hey, someone's separating, I can't pay for their leave payout, and can you pay for it? That's kind of, and I'm like, well, you know, I have a very small limited budget for those types of things, and you know, we're constantly thinking about, you know, how are we going to mitigate all of these costs moving forward? And so I'm in support of this rule. I mean, unfortunately, it does make a distinction, a lot more of a distinction between an RCUOG employee and a UOG employee. But this is kind of, you know, this is the crossroads that we're at. And I think having this policy in place does make it clear that for PIs or for whoever, you know, we can't ask for UOG to bail out the leave payouts.
Yeah, thank you, Rachel. And yeah, actually, this actually also helps the University of Guam, because that means if an RCUOG employee were to move to a University of Guam position, they can also only carry over 80 hours as opposed to more than that. So that was another thinking to it. And of course, one of the thinking should be as well is that we should be having our employees go on leave anyways and not over accumulate, because it's important to their work-life balance as well to be able to do so.
I have something to say. As a small business owner, kudos to you for taking action, because it would be very difficult for me to present this to my employees.
Yes.
But good for you. And these are hard decisions that you have to make and hard choices. And I'm glad you were able to make it and do it.
Thank you. Hi, board member.
Yes.
Okay. Oh.
Sorry about that.
Any other comments? Yeah.
Sorry, I had a question just for Michael on this one. I'm supportive of the resolution, especially because the carryover is not allowed by the 2 CFR that you had cited there. And I had just was wondering, because I know Gov Guam allows for like 320 hours to be carried over of annual. And I think sick leave is kind of essentially almost unlimited. And so I was wondering how many do we know how many is this a prospective application or is there going to be time for some of the units to be able to allow people to go on leave to exhaust, or will they basically lose it October 1? I'm just wondering what the impact is, and I'm not sure how many employees may have more than 80.
We ran the numbers before this meeting. We have about 30% of employees.
Okay. And is there going to be time for them to be able to utilize that leave? And yeah.
I think it got frozen a little bit, so I didn't catch all that.
Yeah, I was just wondering if will there be enough time for them to use the leave, or will this take effect when the new fiscal year starts?
Well, the thinking that I had is that it would be effective after the resolution passes. Technically, no one's really affected unless there is a pause, suspension, termination, day to resign, or to leave job, or to get terminated. So technically, everybody has the ability currently, unless worst case scenario, we get a grant that gets terminated tomorrow, to be able to utilize their leave. In regards to carryover, our current carryover process or our current carryover policy is 80 hours to the next fiscal year, and anything after that currently discarded. You no longer have it. That applies even to myself and all of our employees, actually. So this is kind of an extent of that. At the same time, basically saying if you were terminated, that there is no leave payout, basically.
Okay,
It
thanks.
doesn't obstruct people from technically going on leave before they resign.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I'm thinking about what general counsel would say because under the employment and are the faculty who are engaged as principal investigators, co-PIs, or employed under the RCOG umbrella, would they still be subjected to the board union, faculty union? Oh, here he is.
Oh
Would
no, I've
this
been
be
here.
something that has to run through?
No, because basically for any faculty, full-time faculty on the UOG side, this is outside employment for them. And it basically this is not their faculty employment. This is like part-time outside work. Or that's the way it
Good
should
thing.
be. Please tell me if I'm wrong.
It is.
Okay,
They
fair
don't
enough.
earn leave in RCOG. They
There
earn
we go.
leave with the University of Guam, so they wouldn't have RCOG leave anyways.
All right.
Okay, great. I fully support. I want to see if there are any other comments before we call for the vote. Okay, so I don't see any. Let's see. All in favor of approving resolution number 25-05 relative to amending the RCOG employee handbook, please signify by saying aye, raising your right hand.
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay, any opposed? Okay, any abstention? The ayes have it. Resolution 2505 is approved. The next item on the agenda is Resolution 25-06, item 4.4, relative to amending the RCOG travel policy. Michael?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is another new resolution that I'm introducing. It's to again amend the travel policy. I realize that I keep amending the travel policy within my resolutions, but we always find new reasons to amend it. One of them, and why I'm bringing this up more than anything, is trying to be able to reduce the amount of travel authorizations in which people purchase their ticket or their hotel room or other things before a travel authorization is even signed and approved. And we've thought of both positives, ways to be able to help them, as well as, of course, some ramifications for paying for something before you get a travel authorization approved. So this language is a little bit easier to be able to understand. Number one, the number one reason why many travel fare hold services like FareLop for United is allowable as an expenditure, but only if you have a policy about it. So this is our policy for it, us saying that it would be allowable. In this case, it would allow the traveler to have ease of mind that their fare would not be going while our travel authorization is routing through the different signatures and different review process. Normally a FareLop, normally in between $2 to $20. So it's also very affordable. Do note that it can only be allowable as a cost if the travel actually happens. That's key because every now and then we do have some travels that cancel due for whatever. And so we can't charge a grant for a canceled fare hold if that doesn't materialize. That is probably the number one reason why people decide to be able to pay for their airfare ticket before TA is approved. And we think this would really alleviate that stress. And at the same time, it will also help my review team as well, because we do realize that travelers are very antsy, ensuring that they get the fare possible, and it forces the travel authorization process to kind of be a little bit too quick sometimes. So we're hopeful this helps with that. In our, I wanted to include the following language: that travelers are prohibited from booking airfare, lodging, or other major related travel expenses prior to full approval of the TA by RCOG. That's known language already. It's not there currently in our travel policy, but throughout they are not supposed to do that. I just wanted to ensure that it was there and that's not allowable. I would like to add the following provision to section 9 of our policy, which TA says is that if you do decide to buy some of your travel expenses before, that the traveler would not be offered a travel advance. That's usually what happens anyways, as of this moment, for at least the people that currently break these rules. B, the traveler shall not be reimbursed for airfare, lodge, or other travel costs until the travel clearance is submitted and approved. And lastly, that the traveler's reimbursement may be delayed up to 30 days. It's really us just trying to deter this from happening. It's not extremely rampant in COG, but there are specific travelers that we have in mind where it just does happen. And it's something that we're trying to nip in the bud, because it's a clarification from what you're supposed to be doing, is getting your travel authorization done first before buying something, just the way our procurement process is, where you're supposed to do a purchase order before you buy something. It's the exact same thing, and we're just trying to put some ramifications, because currently, right now, what's happening is really working, so we just want to put a little bit of ramifications that are out there so that we can stop this from happening, honestly. And then there is one more that I am adding as well. What I have noticed with many travelers, I think I've seen this also on the University of Guam's side as well, that there are many cases where travelers pay for expenses beyond themselves. Sometimes a traveler could be paying for 5 students, including them, and then 2 other workers as well. And sometimes those travel expenses that being reimbursed could be upwards of over $10,000 sometimes. So one of the things that we do have in our travel authorization form right now is we do enable an employee or an employer travel to be able to, after a TA is approved, you can pay for your own airfare and get reimbursed. But we would only like to limit it to themselves only, because One thing I've heard quite a bit from many GovGuam hearings is, what are you doing with the miles? What are you doing with the points that you're earning as a traveler? And I feel like it's dangerous sometimes when we have some employees that are sometimes spending, $5,000 or $10,000 for other people's travelers in their TA as well. So those kind of things normally should be either done by the other traveler and or using GOG's credit card, so they can get those miles and then be able to utilize that to be able to send more students to where it is that they need to go, rather than going to the personal travelers, miles or points. So that's what this is for, and that's what this resolution is for. Other questions?
Yeah, thank you very much, Michael. So I think that we entertain a motion for action? If not, I've got to entertain a motion for action.
Regent Chen motions.
Thank you. Motion made by Regent Chen, seconded by Dr. Well, Ryan, yes. Thank you very much. Professor Ryan Shook, any discussion on this motion?
So, Michael, I just was basically what I'm getting from this is that sort of the deeper cause here is, people are maybe doing this out of to speed up the process because this paperwork is not as timely or it doesn't get turned around as quickly. I mean, I know this is a deterrent. Is this going to sort of fix that? The fare lock is going to give the, let's say they do the 14 days, it's going to give enough time.
Yes,
Okay, perfect.
it should be give more than enough time to be able to do so. I mean, just to be clear, this is not a very common that happens.
Okay.
It's, when it does happen, it's a thing that I'm going to prevent from happening. I think the fare lock would very much help with that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments, questions? Don't see any. Okay, I'll call. All in favor resolution number of approving resolution number 25-06, please signify by saying aye, raising your hand.
Aye.
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 One. Any opposed? Okay, any abstentions? Okay, the ayes have it. Resolution 25-06 is approved. Okay, I don't see any other business on the agenda. I just want to thank everyone. Thank you, Team RCOG, for your incredible work. And thank you to our board members. Thank you for being part of this journey and for your valuable time. Thank you for everyone else who has joined us. I will go ahead and entertain a motion for adjournment at this time.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. A motion was made, okay, by Dr. Charlene, seconded by Regent Chen. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. This meeting is now adjourned. Thank you so much, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your summer. And Biba EOG, Biba RUCEOG.
Biba.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you all.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.